Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of All Things Policy. We have often heard the common cliche that every crisis is also an opportunity, or the other cliche that every cloud has a silver lining. But in India, we probably stretch this to unimaginable limits. We think that only a crisis can bring about opportunities for reforms. So today, I want to discuss some of these interesting questions about the COVID crisis and the pandemic and reforms that India requires. And is it that only a crisis such as this can jolt India into bringing about the necessary reforms? Or can we do reforms under normal circumstances as well? So to discuss some of these, I think, interesting issues, I have Pranay Kotasthane alongside with me. Hi, Pranay.
Hi, Anupam. Today, the rule has been reversed.
Yes, indeed, it has. So let's discuss some of these interesting questions. Okay, I have probably three extremely interrelated and even overlapping kind of questions. So let's start with the first one, which is, do we need a crisis to jolt us into making long-pending reforms? And in the Indian context especially, we have seen that some of the biggest reforms that we have undertaken has probably come at the backdrop of critical crisis, right? The biggest one that, of course, comes to mind is the 1991 crisis. We had a balance of payment crisis where we did not have enough money or foreign exchange to, you know, import oil for the next 7-10 days. Everyone knows the story and the dramatic kind of events surrounding it. And that kind of propelled India into this entire reforms period where we introduced the LPG or, you know, liberalization, privatization and globalization and so on. And interestingly enough, we've not had a crisis of that magnitude since then. And therefore, we've also kind of not seen, a set of, big bang kind of reforms since then, right? The last set of reforms was in 1991. After that, you know, until even 2020, we've done kind of incremental reforms, but not really some of the, you know, bigger kind of reforms. Factor markets, for example, has not been touched at all. Labor and land are some things that we have not touched since then. So is it because of the absence of crisis? Is there a problem here of, you know, correlation versus causation? What is your thoughts on this, Pranay?
Yeah, before getting into that, Anupam, I have realized that you yourself have written an op-ed and you also written a research document on how this is an opportunity. The current crisis is an opportunity for India to shore up its strategic petroleum reserves, right?
Yes, I'm guilty of doing the same thing.
So the fact is that a lot of us, you, me, a lot of people in this policy space are trying to say that, you know, given that we are in a crisis, there is an opportunity to change the status quo fundamentally, right? So the argument is that this should jolt us into action. Things were going on in the wrong direction for far too long, and this should give us an opportunity to take a few tough decisions. That is broadly the point, right?
Correct.
I try to explore a bit of public policy literature to try to understand why do we say so, right? Why does a crisis actually spring up an policy opportunity? And is it even true that crises actually are, like, what are the conditions that need to be satisfied in order for a crisis to become an opportunity, right? So while I was looking that up, my overall analysis of this is that we should actually be really scared of crisis, okay? Yeah. And we should not be hoping for crisis. We take this far too seriously, and we start thinking that the only way to bring reform in India is to first stumble into a crisis and then turn it around. But as we know, that crises really have direct consequences, which will be bad for a lot of people, like we are experiencing COVID-19, and there are real first order effects. But there are also second order effects. The first thing that we should understand is that not all crises actually lead to reforms. Okay, so that's the analogy which I was trying to put up, that thinking that crisis it leads to reform, it's like saying that Team India should always put itself in a follow-on situation in a test match. so that we can replicate the heroics of the 2001 Kolkata test, right?
I particularly like that analogy, of course, given that that seems like a, I mean, that remains for me one of my favorite tests. But so essentially, you cannot take it for granted that every crisis will lead to reforms, correct?
Yes, exactly. So the reality is that crises are no guarantee for reforms either. Okay, so basically, there are many other conditions also that need to be satisfied in order for you to turn any crisis into an opportunity.
Right. So what are these conditions?
Let's study the merits of this intuition, right, that crisis is an opportunity for reform. So this comes from a framework that John Kingdon had written about. So he has a classic book called Agendas, Alternatives and Public Policies. And in that book, he tries to analyze what are the conditions that make any policy issue actually reach the government's policy agenda, right? So governments at any point of time will be flooded with, you know, millions of requests. So what is it that brings some of them to the policy agenda at any particular point of time? This was a question he was investigating. And he sort of comes up with this framework and says that a policy change happens only when three distinct streams converge. They are the problem stream, the solution stream, and the politics stream. So let's look at these three in greater detail, right? So what does a problem stream mean? Problem stream just means essentially that first you need to acknowledge the problem at hand at the highest political level, right? So if a problem is not acknowledged, then it can never be picked up for solution. It seems trivial, but it is important, right? For example, no one in Indian government is worried about how should India reach Saturn, right? I mean, that's not a policy problem which is of importance, not framed as such either.
Sorry, Pranay, to cut you short, but let me actually take something, an example, which is probably a lot more relevant to Indian policy making. Unemployment crisis in India, for example, while there's been a lot of talk about it from academia and scholars and, you know, laymen even, I don't think that problem has been acknowledged at the political level at all. So there is no problem stream, definitely no solution stream, and therefore definitely no political stream either.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And in fact, unemployment is a interesting example because now it is beginning to enter that area, right? Remember, there was this speech on Pakodanomics and all that, right? On, about the Pakoda Walas are also having a job. So that conversation has already started, right? Maybe 10 years ago, we were not discussing that so much. In fact, but there was also the beginning of this conversation on jobless growth and things. So I think unemployment is broadly, it has reached the problem stream now, at least it, in various ways. But solution stream and the political stream are yet to align on that.
All right. So next, go on to the, solution stream before I cut you short. Yeah.
Yeah. No, before that, I just wanted to say, so here is where the crisis plays a role. Okay. So a crisis often turns out to be instrumental in driving home the point that the problem needs an immediate solution. We need to do something about it. Okay. So that's where the role of a crisis comes. But it does not necessarily mean that one, that crisis is the only sort of problem stream solution. It can be something else, right? It can also be that there is a government order and people actually want to change things. So it can be various things, right? I mean, we did the biggest reform of India was about not just economic reforms, but political reforms wise also. We put in place a constitution which was far ahead of its time. There was no as such a crisis at that particular point of time. We were in colonial rule for a long particular period of time, right? So there were some other ways because of which we took that particular route, okay? So crisis often turns out to be a type of problem that government needs to acknowledge, but by itself, neither is crisis the only such thing. And also, it does not guarantee that there will be a solution because the other two streams also need to be met. All right. So let's come to the second stream here, which is the solution stream. Now, solution stream refers to, you know, the entire solution set which is available to a decision maker. Now, remember, when government needs to act on anything, let's say the government has said that, you know, yeah, you need to act on unemployment. What is the government going to do? It's not as if Modi or Manmohan Singh will come up with a solution from ground zero, right? What they are going to do is they are going to pick up the already existing solutions which are there with them, which have been formulated earlier by the policy community, which have been vetted by expert committees. So they are going to pick the dust off some of these committee reports and then pick that up for solution, right? So essentially, first thing after problem statement recognition which you require is a wide set of solutions available in the hands of the decision maker.
Right.
Right. For example, climate change currently. It is an issue where the problem itself now is well acknowledged. Right. I mean, apart from Donald Trump, I think everyone else in the world broadly recognizes that it is a problem that needs to be solved. But the solution streams are still not aligned, right? Because we still don't know what are the things we need to do in order to avoid this. And even if we do all the things that the IPCC says, can we arrest climate change? That is still not certain, right? So this is where we end up with, that's why there is not much happening on climate change. Governments are doing a bit here and there, but the solution stream is still not aligned. Now, in this solution, right, there are many interesting things. Anupam, we generally look at expert committees with a lot of disdain, right?
Yeah. And
so, but actually, if you look at it from this framework, the expert committees play a very important role. Okay, because in the solution stream, you need a few things to fall in place, right? First, you need to have an availability of data in order to, you know, even propose a solution. If you don't have the data, like if your unemployment thing falls in this place, right? You don't have the data.
Yeah.
We never don't even know what is the real number of people employed, unemployed, and things like that, right? So once you have the availability of data, then the second step would be you need a presence of a policy community which systematically converts some of the ideas into well thought out solutions. They do a cost benefit analysis and they come up with a range of options, right? Some very good, some bad, whatever, but there is a wide range of options available. And then comes an expert committee process, which will, you know, sort of go through all these solutions. People from the government and various parts of the society will come together and then weigh these various solutions from think tanks, from corporate organizations, and then come up with their own assessment on what a problem, on which solution works and which doesn't, right? So remember, all this should have happened even before the crisis hits us, in order for any solution to be picked up.
That's true. And therefore, I mean, that's the important thing, right? Essentially, you know, one of the other rule of thumbs that we have is that unless you have, you know, three alternatives or three alternative policy solutions, then you don't really have a policy problem, right? Or rather, the framing of the problem is wrong. And I think that is where it's increasingly important that you need a set of people who are, of course, in the know, who are domain experts, who can look at these different alternatives, rank them according to various criteria, do a detailed cost-benefit analysis, and then start proposing solutions. At the same time, you need to look at what could be the possible unintended consequences, what could, you know, possibly go wrong, what is the cost of that failure. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done before, you know, enacting any of these policies. And essentially, that means all of this, as you correctly said, has to be done before a crisis. You can't do it at the moment of the crisis, and therefore you will end up doing either things hastily, you'll do things wrong, you'll pick on the wrong policies, which have very deep kind of negative consequences.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, Anupam, the 91 economic crisis, which we often take as this, you know, a perfect ideal type for crisis turning into opportunity, what people forget is that there was 20 years of solid solution stream work done before the crisis hit us. So Manmohan Singh, in fact, Jairam Ramesh writes it in his book on the economic reforms, and Ajay Shah and Vijay Kelkar also have this in their book on public policy, and they mentioned the type of work which was going on since 70s and 80s. In fact, Manmohan Singh was himself involved in a lot of these things. So that solution stream was built up over many, many years before the crisis took place. Okay, so that's why we were actually, when the crisis hit us, we were able to take some good decisions and not go the wrong way, right? We could have as well reacted to that situation going the completely opposite direction, right? Yeah, I mean, let's become authoritarian, or let's increase import tariffs or things like that.
Yeah, let's become completely protectionist so that if you have a balance of payments crisis, then yeah, you just protect from all kinds of imports. That could have been done. Thankfully, it wasn't. So this kind of takes me to another example. I mean, sorry to bring this up, but you know, if you look at what happens when you don't do all of these things, that is, you know, an expert committee kind of work, then I think you end up with something like demonetization, right? You work on something on a whim. Essentially, you have some form of problem. It's not a crisis, but you have some form of problem, which is corruption and black money, etc. And then you do the first kind of solution without looking at alternatives. Then, yeah, you end up with probably something like demonetization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in fact, yeah, demonetization is a good example where the political stream and the problem stream met, and the solution stream was underdeveloped, yeah, right? Because this was not put out into the public domain. We still don't know who are the actual people who proposed this. Even the RBI people were in the dark about it, right? Yeah. So quite clearly, the work that needs to happen at the solution stream, first availability of data, exchange of ideas, putting the data, getting feedback, expert committee, that was just short-circuited, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's look at the third stream, which is the political stream. Is that just the alignment of political will towards a particular solution for a problem?
Yeah, it is broadly that. So the way Kingdon defines it is that political stream comprises of the public mood, dominant societal narratives, you know, even election results and global trends, right? So all these actually bring the Overton window. So this is the Overton window point, right? These are the actual events which make a problem urgent and important, and they need to be solved, right? So in the political stream, one example of this is change in government is often, you know, interpreted as a go ahead for incoming government's manifesto, right? So governments write a lot of things in their manifesto, but and if they come to power, the first few years are the best times for the government to take up any big reforms, because they can easily say, you know, we were voted for this, and that's why we can take the big steps.
Right.
So in this, the one subset of the political stream is this idea of political will. Now, this is again an oft-repeated phrase, right? We often hear it every time. What is political will and all that, right? So the thing about political will is that, you know, political actors can actually change dominant societal narratives. The interesting part is that major crisis can be a point for really statesmen or stateswomen to choose that particular crisis and change dominant societal narratives. Okay, so this is where I want to put forward another framework that we in public policy talk about, and that is by Robert Putnam. So he, in his paper, Diplomacy and Domestic Games, a very interesting paper, he argues that any politics which happens, he takes an example of international negotiations, but this applies to any kind of politics. It basically happens at two levels. Okay, so at level one are the people who are at the table. So for example, Modi is negotiating with Trump. Okay, so just take that example. That's the level one conversation. But at level two, the national governments are negotiating with domestic groups who are also trying to force the government to do something or block something. Politics is not just a conversation at level one partner, but it is also a conversation between level one actors and level two actors. Okay, so the key insight that he came up with is that the dynamics of negotiation at level one can be used as points of leverage on level two and vice versa. Okay, so this is an interesting point, right? So take the example of 91 reforms. What happened there? Basically, Narasimha Rao and Manmohan Singh were able to use the rationale of external pressure at level one, right? They said that there are conditionalities imposed by World Bank, IMF, we are in a really bad situation, we need to change things, etc. So they used that as a leverage to water down the opposition which existed in level two, that is our domestic constituents who were opposing any sort of reform.
Yeah.
Right? So they were able to use that as a point of leverage, a crisis or situation, and use that to convince people back home that, hey, if we don't do things now, we are going to be in deep trouble. See, I am not responsible for it. This is what the IMF or the World Bank is saying, but we have to do this.
Yeah.
So that was a smart political move, right? They obviously knew that these things have to be done from a long time. Like Manmohan Singh was at the forefront of many of these policies. The particular situation of IMF conditionalities, etc., was used expertly to develop political will and align the political stream on that topic.
Yeah, that provided the impetus, so to speak, for political action.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was enlightened leadership at several levels, right? First, they had a solution stream in place and also they were able to use that crisis to maneuver us in the right direction.
So this was informative in the sense that we first established that a crisis by itself cannot guarantee reforms, right? Mm-hmm. And through this entire process, because you need a whole set of conditions to kind of come together and align. And then, you know, you basically want all the stars to be aligned and et cetera, for things to happen. But the second part of this question also kind of intrigues me, which is that then is it, you know, crises cannot guarantee reforms, but why do we, you know, not see as much reforms outside of the crisis zone? For example, if, you know, in India, in the last 10 to 15 years, I think probably the biggest reform we've seen, which has a very real kind of impact, is probably the IBC. And even that has been watered down. IBC is one, the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code. And probably GST is the second one. And GST is, you know, kind of botched up, etc. But even that Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code was at the backdrop or on the heels of a banking crisis that is ongoing. Sure, it's not, you know, as dramatic as COVID, or it's not in your face sort of crisis, but it's a ever persistent, looming large kind of crisis. GST by itself, I mean, our tax revenues has always been not as great. Our tax to, you know, both direct and indirect taxes, and there was a reform required, but probably you can take GST as one of the reforms that was not done in the face of a crisis. So, but what does it take for, you know, reforms to happen in a non-crisis sense? I mean, so let me put it the other way. How do you push problems or issues to the Overton window, right? Such that that urgency is developed so that you can look at it, and, you know, and how can you do all of this outside of a crisis?
Yeah. So Anupam, actually, GST is a good example where there was not a specific crisis or one event which we needed to directly act on and we took a decision. In fact, the second one is demonetization, right? We know that the solution was bad, but there was no specific one urgent thing which had, like COVID-19, which had to be acted upon, right?
Yeah.
So that's the second one. The third one is also, go back a few years, we also did the nuclear tests, right?
Correct.
Now, this is not in the economic realm, but it changed India, right?
Yeah.
And that was also done not because there was one immediate thing which was going to change and we had to do it at that particular point of time, right? Still, the government did it. So there are a bunch of other reforms that we can assess which were taken without the presence of this looming crisis that needs to be acted upon immediately. So I think we don't appreciate that. There are a lot of good incremental reforms of this kind which have happened over the years. In fact, even the divestment that we took up during Arun Shori's time, etc. Right. So there are a bunch of examples, but I think they don't reach the heroic status, right? That you can change things with one swoop opportunity. Yeah. They are probably the Rahul Dravid of reforms.
Okay, still sticking to cricket analogies. Yeah. Okay, right, fantastic. And I'm probably a big fan of Rahul Dravid, so I will stick to that. Yeah.
But not all of us are Anupams.
Right. So the final bit, and I've seen this quite often in the op-ed columns or podcasts or whatever other mediums in which people talk about their ideas. One other kind of thing that you see now is that everyone wants to peddle their favorite reform and then, you know, disguise it under the solution that we require for this particular crisis. And especially at a time like this, when, you know, something like a pandemic, which is overarching and probably, you know, covers every other aspect of human life, it's easy to say, you know, this is a crisis, this is a solution that I've always wanted to push for, and I will use this, this particular crisis as an opportunity to push for my favorite reform, right? And we've seen lots of that as well. So my kind of take on this is that there are probably certain reforms which is, you know, that now is not the right time. For example, I could think of two, and I just want to pick your brain if you can think of others. You know, in every other probably place, I always, you know, bat for labor reforms, irrespective of what I'm talking about. You know, I could be talking about the most irrelevant issue, but I will try and bring in labor reforms as one of the things that India has to do, because it's one of the things that I truly care about. But I will actually say that probably now, which is, you know, COVID-19 kind of immediate thing. Labor reforms is not the right thing to do. I mean, giving companies the power to fire indiscriminately, which I think normally should have existed, but now is not the right time to bring about it. Probably a year and a half down the line, it could be the sensible thing to do, but not right now, right? The other thing that is favorite, you know, again, I read this somewhere, we should sell Air India. Now, as a form of, you know, revenue, this thing. Sure, I mean, I like it. I always say that we should sell Air India. We should not hold on to it, etc. But at a time like this, when there is no investment coming forth, when there's a lack of liquidity, and when other airlines are struggling to just stay afloat, I don't think anyone will come forward to, you know, buy Air India. And any kind of time that the government spends on trying to package Air India into a sellable deal will probably, you know, is a waste of time and effort at this moment, right? So, you know, these are a couple of examples that I could think of that... don't use every crisis as an opportunity to peddle all of your favorite reforms, right? Even there, pick and choose as to what can work, what is relevant now, what can give you maximum kind of benefit to the effort gone in. And at a time like this, you need to do that kind of cost-benefit analysis, right? What will this kind of give as in terms of returns for society?
Right. Anupam, I have a different view on this.
Okay.
What I think is we need to differentiate our dharma as a policy analyst and the dharma as a thinker on this. Okay.
Right.
So if I take as a dharma as a policy analyst, I think the best way to do this is, yeah, keep arguing for the best possible reforms in that you are convinced about, right? And you have data on, etc. And if this crisis helps you make that point, well and good, right? Keep going ahead and telling the government, you know, because the Overton window frameworks also suggest that, you know, the best way to bring reforms is as policy analysts, we need to surface the best possible solutions that we can think of and not worry so much about what the political people are thinking, what their condition is, what their constraints are, etc. All right. So that's the dharma as a policy analyst. But now you are applying this lens of a thinker, right? That you're saying, what is the reality that reforms in particular area will actually go through?
Yeah.
Now, when you look from that lens, I agree to what you said, right? So then it makes a point that we need to actually see the reforms where solution stream has already been developed. We need to see areas where problem stream has already developed. And we also need to see the area where this government is more likely to have the political will to drive through, right? So if we see the confluence of all these three areas, then yes, things like probably... this is actually an opportunity for India to argue for driving some of the global manufacturing supply chains away from China, because many countries are going to be doing that and India can take some reforms to drive this point home. Right? So there are some areas where we can do that. So if you see it as a thinker, you will be able to separate some reforms. But as a policy analyst, I would still argue just keep going at it at the problems that you think need to be solved in the long run.
Sure. Actually, I don't want to stretch this on too much, but even as a policy analyst, I'm saying that there's an opportunity cost for recommending, someone doing your policy now, which could have, you know, as I said, if the bureaucracy spends a lot of time on packaging Air India, that might be time not spent on something else, right? That was the only angle I was coming from.
Yeah, people are not going to take you seriously if you are going to do argue those points which are not critical now, but you can go and still make it.
Yeah. So let us probably end this on just one or two thoughts, which is given now, since we spoke about all of this, given this particular crisis, Pranay, what do you think are the kind of top line items which, you know, kind of tick all the criteria boxes that you mentioned about the problem stream, the solution stream, and the political stream? What do you think going forward, India will, you know, be able to do some of the reforms? For me, one of the things that could kind of stands out and probably is obvious is the healthcare. Some kind of reforms in healthcare. It could be insurance, it could be greater government spending, it could be different kinds of provisions. I don't know how or what exact shape it will take, but it is at the top of the agenda, at least. It's entered the political and the the problem stream. We don't know. I don't think there's a very well-defined solution that everyone agrees upon yet. But that could be found out in the next, 6 to 7 months. That's probably one area that I see. Is there anything else that comes to the top of your head?
Public health, yeah. I think problem stream and there will also be in the, when we talk about the political stream, one of the things is about, what people think as well, right?
Yeah.
And we are, as a human species, we are very good at taking recent experiences and acting on that, because there will be this availability heuristic, right?
Yeah.
We were hit by a pandemic. Something needs to be done on the pandemic. So there will be some action on that.
Which is not a bad thing per se at this moment, right? I mean, if this jolts us into doing something in the overall public health domain, I think, yeah, since it's been neglected for so long.
No, Anupam, you are being too hopeful.
Okay.
For a change. Because, you know, as we discussed...
I've never been accused of that, by the way, but yeah. Sure.
See, the solution stream, like you discussed, is not very well developed, right? Yeah. Do you know of any expert committee reports which have come up on public health care? You know, we have heard and we follow the recommendations of that. Because if that's not the case, what might well happen is we might have solutions like, yeah, nationalized healthcare.
Yeah,
right? We might actually go use this crisis to go the wrong direction.
Correct.
On the other hand, we might actually also pick up areas like, yeah, we should probably go heavy on telemedicine and become the center which, you know, do telemedicine for the entire world. So we can go either direction, right? But I haven't seen a solution stream answer which has a lot of work being done on this already to be able to say what is the right way going ahead.
Okay, thank you for that. Therefore, the moral of the story is keep working on good policy solutions. In a way, I'm kind of, giving an endorsement to what we do as a think tank. So keep working on implementable solutions so that when the problem stream and the political stream collide, you have something ready for implementation. So thank you so much, Pranay, for joining in. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks, Anupam.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst. Or our website, takshashila.org.in.